We're going down a bit of a rabbit hole today, though unlike Alice, we may not find Wonderland. For avid readers, you'll sense there has been a slow build to get here. Prior posts do lend context for what we're discussing, philosophically and scientifically, and, in the broadest sense, physically. But as always, I want this to stand on its own. No scavenger hunt required. If you're new, you're welcome here. If you've been walking with me for a while, consider this a deeper chamber in a familiar cave. Our reality is not how we think it is. Not because the world is fake, not because everything is a trick, not because the universe is out to deceive us, but because perception is not a window. It is an interface. It is a negotiated boundary between a living organism and an unfathomably large environment. What we call the world is not the world as it is. It is the world as it can be experienced by a creature like us, with our particular sensors, our particular history, our particular needs, and our particular limitations. The interface to our lived reality and the deeper reality itself do not correlate on a one-to-one basis. They rhyme. They do not mirror. This is the quiet scandal at the heart of ordinary life. We move through a universe we cannot directly access. We do not perceive the majority of what exists. We do not even perceive everything that matters. Because what matters depends on the kind of being you are. A bat's world is stitched together with echoes. A bee's world is painted with ultraviolet signals and invisible maps of flowers. A snake's world includes heat signatures, living gradients we can't imagine. Even within our own species, two people can stand in the same room and inhabit different worlds. One flooded with social signals, another attuned to mechanical details, another listening for emotional weather, another scanning for danger. Same room, different reality, not metaphorically, functionally. When we say reality, we often mean what I see. And when we say what I see, we often mean what is there. But those are not the same sentence. Vision is a model. Hearing is a model. Touch is a model. Smell is a model. Your brain is not a passive recorder. It is an active generator. It takes incomplete signals and manufactures coherence. It predicts, fills gaps, smooths edges, and crucially, throws away information. Not because it is broken, but because it is efficient. A perfect perception would be a kind of paralysis. Too much data, too few decisions, too little time. The organism that survives is not the organism that sees the most. It is the organism that sees what helps it act. So let's name the first idea plainly. We live inside an interpretation. That interpretation is astonishingly useful. It is also profoundly partial. And once you let that land, a second idea begins to shimmer into view. If perception is an interface, then reality may come in layers, not as a mystical claim, but as a structural fact. The layer you occupy is the layer your interface can render. Our world is layered. What we see, hear, smell, and touch is one layer, an evolved dashboard. But there may be other layers that hum beneath it, layers we do not yet have the instruments to detect, and perhaps do not yet have the conceptual vocabulary to describe. Technology in this sense is not merely progress. It is a sensory prosthetic. It is the slow expansion of what can be rendered into our interface. Telescopes gave us distance. Microscopes gave us intimacy. Spectrometers gave us hidden signatures. Radio antennas gave us invisible music. Particle detectors gave us the footprints of things we cannot hold. Each invention did not merely add facts, it added worlds. It enlarged the set of realities we can responsibly talk about. And yet even our best formalism, the mathematics, the models, the theories that have carried us so far, does not fully express what is truly out there. Not because science is a failure, but because science is translation. It is a disciplined way of compressing a universe into language. Every translation is a loss. Every map omits. Every model simplifies. The triumph is not that the model is perfect. The triumph is that it works. It predicts. It engineers. It lets us coordinate our actions across minds and across centuries. But usefulness should not be mistaken for completeness. A shadow can be measured without revealing the whole object that cast it. This is why quantum mechanics, for all its precision, feels like a locked door for many people. The math is not decoration, it is the core. Linear algebra is not a side quest, it is the grammar of the theory. And so a strange thing happens. A framework that is empirically among the most successful ever built becomes emotionally inaccessible to those who don't speak its language. The conversation fractures. Some retreat into shallow slogans, others retreat into elitism. Meanwhile, the deeper invitation of quantum theory is left on the table, untouched. But you don't need to do matrix multiplication to grasp the philosophical tremor that quantum mechanics introduces. You only need to accept this. At the foundational level, the universe does not behave like our everyday intuition. It does not behave like solid objects with definite properties waiting to be discovered. It behaves, in many descriptions, like a set of possibilities that only become definite in interaction. Whether that definiteness is created, selected, revealed, or emerges depends on interpretation. But the tremor remains. Reality is not simply a static stage. It is an unfolding negotiation between what exists and what can be registered. Here is where Parallel Worlds enters the story. Not as science fiction scenery, but as a way to talk about what the math seems to imply in certain interpretations. In the many worlds view, the universe does not collapse into a single outcome when something happens. Instead, outcomes branch. The world splits into non-communicating histories. Each history is internally consistent. Each feels singular from the inside. Each is the world to the observer within it. If that's true, then your experienced reality is not the totality of what exists. It is one branch of a larger tree of unfolding possibilities. But even if you don't commit to many worlds as literal truth, it offers an extraordinarily useful lens. It teaches you that what you experience as a single line may, at a deeper level, be a fan of alternatives. That the present is not just a point, it is a crossroads. And that the feeling of singularity, this sense that there is only one world and one history, is partly a feature of how an interface must behave to remain usable. Now bring this back down to Earth. You don't need cosmic branching to live among parallel worlds, you already do. Consider this. Every mind you encounter is a pocket reality, not a separate universe floating in space, but a coherent world model running inside a skull, updated by perception, memory, and meaning. Two people can receive the same information and inhabit different realities because the information is interpreted through different priors, different histories, different fears, different desires, different assumptions about what matters. In that sense, parallel worlds exist socially. They exist psychologically. They exist narratively. They exist as competing explanations that cannot easily be reconciled because they do not share the same foundations. And these pocket realities are not rare anomalies. They are the default condition of human life. Your pocket reality is the set of things your attention allows to be real for you in a given moment. Attention is not neutral. It is a spotlight that creates a world by excluding almost everything else. The moment you focus on a task, the rest of the universe dims. The moment you enter a conversation, the room becomes background. The moment you worry, the future becomes more real than the present. The moment you fall in love, the beloved becomes a center of gravity around which reality reorganizes itself. You do not simply observe the world. You continuously choose which slice of it becomes your lived world. That choice is not always conscious. And this is where the labyrinth deepens. We like to imagine consciousness as a simple lantern we carry. But the conscious being is an unexplored labyrinth, and even the science behind it is still, in many respects, wishy-washy, not because researchers are incompetent, but because the object of study is the very thing doing the studying. We can measure neural correlates, map networks, model cognition, and still not touch the subjective core, the what it is like of experience, the redness of red, the ache of longing, the unity of a moment, the sense of self looking out through a face. So here is a provocative possibility. Pocket realities are not merely mistakes or distortions. They may be necessary. Consciousness may be the mechanism by which a vast layered reality gets locally compressed into something livable. Think of it like this. Your operating system does not show you transistor voltages. It shows you icons. Not because the underlying voltages are unreal, but because icons are the correct interface for a user who wants to do things. Likewise, perception may show you objects and colors and sounds and solid surfaces. Not because those are ultimate, but because they are actionable. The world is rendered into handles you can grab. The deeper physics is not denied, it is simply not displayed. Once you accept that, pocket realities takes on a second meaning. It's not only that different minds run different models. It's that the universe itself may be locally rendered in different ways depending on the scale and the interaction. Reality, in this view, is not a monolith. It is a stack of effective worlds, each one stable within its own context, each one incomplete in the face of the whole. The table is real at the human scale. It is not less real because a physicist can describe it as a swarm of fields and probabilities. The table is an emergent reality, a robust pattern, a stable interface object. It exists as a reliable handle in our pocket reality. And yet that handle dissolves under different questions. Ask about the table's texture, and you get one story. Ask about its atomic structure, and you get another. Ask about its quantum description, and you get a third. None of these stories cancels the others. They are parallel descriptions of a layered thing, each true in its own domain, each incomplete in isolation. And this is where we can get precise without becoming technical. Different layers of reality are governed by different rules of relevance. What matters at one layer may be noise at another. What is stable at one layer may be turbulent at another. You can't use the rules of chess to predict the weather, even though both happen in the same universe. You can't use the rules of fluid dynamics to describe the meaning of a poem, even though the poem is ink on paper, and the ink is molecules, and the molecules are fields. Layers are not separate worlds. They are different regimes of intelligibility. So what, then, are parallel worlds in this essay? They are not only the speculative cosmic branches of quantum interpretation. They are the simultaneous coexistence of multiple valid realities, the physical reality of matter and energy, the biological reality of survival and sensation, the psychological reality of meaning and memory, the social reality of norms and narratives, and the technological reality of mediated attention. Each has its own physics. Each has its own gravity. Each can dominate your life as if it were the whole. You can live in the social layer and be haunted by status, approval, shame, and belonging. You can live in the economic layer and see everything as cost, value, leverage, scarcity. You can live in the psychological layer and interpret every moment through trauma, longing, or hope. You can live in the technological layer and let recommendation engines quietly select the world you inhabit. You can live in the spiritual layer and experience existence as reverence, mystery, or intimate presence. In each case, the pocket reality you occupy becomes self-validating. It presents you with evidence that confirms itself because it determines what counts as evidence. This is not a call to relativism, where anything goes. Some pocket realities are better aligned with the broader terrain than others. Some are more humane, some are more coherent, some are more predictive, some are more liberating. But the uncomfortable truth is that most conflicts, personal, cultural, political, even philosophical, are not merely disagreements about facts. They are collisions between pocket realities that have different definitions of what a fact even is, different assumptions about what matters, and different ways of filtering the world. In that sense, the modern crisis is not only a crisis of information, it is a crisis of interfaces. We are flooded with data, but starved for shared reality. We inhabit parallel feeds, parallel narratives, parallel interpretations, and we mistake the vividness of our pocket for the totality of the world. And yet, there is an unexpected hope hidden here. If you can recognize your reality as a pocket, useful, coherent, limited, you gain a new kind of freedom. You begin to hold your interpretations more lightly. You become less hypnotized by the certainty your mind produces. You learn to ask a different question, not is this real, but real at what layer, and real for what purpose, and real for whom. This posture changes how you move through the world. It introduces humility without collapse. It introduces curiosity without naivete. It softens the impulse to dominate with certainty. It becomes possible to meet another person's pocket reality not as an enemy territory, but as a different interface rendering a different slice of the same vastness. You don't have to agree with it. You don't have to surrender your discernment, but you can approach it with a more honest awareness. Their world feels as solid to them as yours feels to you. And perhaps this is the deeper reason to talk about parallel worlds at all. Not to escape into metaphysics, but to return to life with a more accurate reverence. The universe is stranger than our language. The mind is deeper than our models. Our perceptions are brilliant and incomplete. Our theories are powerful and partial. Our realities are coherent and local. We may never find Wonderland, but we may find something better, a sober awe. A recognition that what we inhabit is not the whole, and that the whole is not obligated to fit inside our intuitions. If reality is layered, then wisdom is learning to move between layers without confusing them. If pocket realities are inevitable, then maturity is learning to check whether your pocket has become a prison. If parallel worlds exist, cosmically, socially, psychologically, then the task is not to panic, but to practice a new discipline, to keep widening the interface. Not by trying to see everything at once. That is impossible. But by learning to notice what your mind excludes, by learning to ask what layer you are in, by learning to translate without reduction, by learning to live as if your model is not the territory, your story is not the whole, your certainty is not the final word. Reality is not a single room you enter. It is a mansion with endless corridors. Perception gives you a key to one door. Science hands you more keys. Love hands you another. Suffering hands you a darker one. Attention decides which door you walk through today.